This is Donovan Dijak from Ring of Honor, and you are feasting your ears on the Nats GM show.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 28.5 of the Nats GM show, the only podcast available via the Nats GM radio network. I am your host, Ryan Sullivan, the chairman of NatsGM.com and the baron of all baseball podcasts. Before we are joined by this week's guest, I would like to briefly mention our sponsor, Amazon.com. If you want to help support this podcast, go to NatsGM.com, click on the Amazon banner on the right side of the page, and do your online shopping. One more quick favor, if I might. Please rate and review the podcast on iTunes, as this helps us gather additional listeners and fans to the show. And now I am excited to be joined by the Ring of Honor 2015 Top Prospect Tournament winner and the newest member of the House of Truth, Donovan Dijak. Donovan, welcome to the Nats GM show.
Yes, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
You are the first wrestler we've had on the show. So first of all, I appreciate you helping to break this ground. And two, just a big fan of your work. I've been a big fan of yours for the last probably 6 to 8, 10 months. So thank you for joining me. It's a real thrill to talk to you today.
Oh, I'm glad I could be the groundbreaker. It's always thrilling to be the man who sets the bar for everyone else.
Well, that's quite a heavy load to have to put on you today. So I'm
very burdened.
Yeah, I'm sure. So, but first and foremost, I just want to give you a place here to introduce yourself to the audience, to some that may not know Ring of Honor or may not know you that well. And did you grow up a wrestling fan? And you know who were some of your favorites? And just like I say, introduce yourself a little bit to the audience.
Sure. So, growing up, I was a wrestling fan. It started around the age of 12, surprisingly. I didn't grow up necessarily in the environment, like as a young kid. I was always aware of it, but my parents kind of discouraged violence and things like that. So I'm almost 28 now. So I was 12 years old. It was, you know, 1999, the Attitude Era and everything like that. My brother started watching, and so he and I started watching kind of behind my parents' backs without permission. We had just gotten cable, so that was, you know, the first time we even really had the option to watch, as far as I know, aside from some of that early Saturday morning stuff. But early on, I started to gravitate towards the Stone Cold Steve Austin character, like most other people. I really didn't like The Rock, so that was a great, fun sort of time in wrestling to be watching. Then around, I want to say 2002 or 2003, that's when I started to really get into sports, like high school sports, football and basketball, and I had to focus most of my time on that. You know, Monday nights were typically practice, lifting, whatever it happened to be. And that really it kind of extended itself about 9 years total, where I was really fully involved in sports, two sports at least, sometimes three. That lasted all the way through college, 5 years of college. And then around 2000 and, oh gosh, what was it? 2010, I guess, 2011 maybe, was my final year of collegiate sports, and then 2012 is when I discovered the New England Pro Wrestling Academy, although I started watching wrestling again, the WWE product anyway, in 2011, once I didn't have sports anymore. I guess I sort of picked up right where I left off, even though it was a pretty gigantic gap of a decade, but you know, it was still there. I just, you know, never had the time while I was playing the two sports.
Yeah, that's understandable. I mean, I think we've all gone through patterns of, you know, getting in and out of the product when life gets a little busy. So who trained you, and when did you start training to be a wrestler?
Uh, I started in, I guess it was, I did a one-day fantasy camp in August of 2012, and that's at the New England Pro Wrestling Academy in North Andover, Massachusetts, formerly known as the Chaotic Training Center and formerly known as Killer Kowalski's School of Professional Wrestling. The head trainer now right now is a guy by the name of Brian Fury. He's been featured a few times on Ring of Honor television. He's a local standout, one of the, if not the best, professional wrestler in the New England independent scene. He's had some appearances on WWE TV as well. Also, at the beginning of my training, a lot of it involved was he's now known as Warbeard Hansen. So he was involved a lot in my early training. And then there's, a lot of, it's really a productive school to be at because there's, so many great New England connections that make their way through. A lot of my training has been developed under Tommaso Ciampa and Matt Taven and Brutal Bob Evans and, John Walters and, Chase Del Monte, Brian Malonis, just all these, some of them are nationally recognized names. Some of them are more local, but it's really been a productive environment to be around, and it's been the top reason I would say that my progression has happened at such an accelerated rate.
Well, and I might be skipping ahead a bit with this question, but why is it that we're seeing so much talent come out of the New England area? I mean, they mentioned it in your match this weekend, just all the Ring of Honor top prospect tournament winners, Matt Taven, Mike Bennett, Hansen, as you mentioned. It just seems like there's a lot of talent coming out of that area. Why is that?
Yeah, not just the Ring of Honor talent, too. There's also, the worldwide recognized independent talents like Biff Busick trained at the Chaotic Training Center. The WWE NXT Women's Champion, Sasha Banks, trained at the New England Pro Wrestling Academy. Who else? Kofi Kingston trained at the Chaotic Training Center. I think I've been asked that question a lot, and I think that you can really... there's two reasons. One is that, the Northeast and Massachusetts, Boston area in particular, have a really sort of blue collar environment where people, know how to, dedicate themselves and I don't want to say it's a product exclusively of the weather, but we kind of just have a chip on our shoulder in terms of working hard and shoveling out and things like that. Getting up and going to work every day, even though it's freezing ass cold. And then that combined with a handful of guys who really understood the business and sort of laid down their legacy in terms of training, and that starts with the I don't want to call him like the godfather of New England wrestling, but he sort of is, Walter Killer Kowalski, who obviously trained guys like Triple H, Perry Saturn, China. So that started with the Killer Kowalski's School of Professional Wrestling in Malden, Massachusetts, which eventually turned into the location at North Andover where we train now. Along with him is another guy by the name of Steve Bradley, who is probably the most underrated wrestler in the history of WWE. A guy that had the in-ring down to an exact science, pretty much, although it's an art form, but I mean, he's a guy who really mastered the in-ring. And this is a guy who, while he was in developmental, had a hand in, even though he was a developmental wrestler, he had a hand in training you know, pretty much every guy who came through that OVW system who ended up having, you know, huge success, like the Kurt Angles of the world. So after he was released, he opened up a school in Manchester, New Hampshire. It was something like the Top Rope Academy or something like that. And that's where, you know, Eddie Edwards, got a lot of the bulk of his training. He also was trained by, Walter, and my trainer, Brian Fury, was trained by him as well. So those two, and then you have the sort of Rhode Island piece of it, which is the Spike Dudley School, along with Ryan Drew, who's now taken it over. So that collection, also a trainer out in Western Massachusetts. I mean, it's sort of, I don't want to say it's territorial based, because it's not at all. All those guys get along perfectly well, and we all have a great relationship with one another. But the Western Mass area is sort of manned by Antonio Thomas, who was a former WWE guy in the Heartthrobs, and he also was trained by Steve Bradley. So that's sort of the current status of all of the sort of pieces and parts of New England in terms of, you know, what I would consider the top quality training in the area. And you can see how most of that got derived from two or three guys from the you know 90s and early 2000s and that sort of time period.
So we're just seeing their work kind of flourishing and working on down the chain.
It, pretty much, yeah. I mean, I couldn't tell you who Steve himself was trained by, but you know, every you can always see reflections of guys' work and who they were trained by, and it all, you know, you take bits and pieces of that and then you mix it with your own, but you know, every wrestler has the DNA of and the blueprint of, you know, bits and pieces of every guy, you know, up the ladder, so to speak.
Yeah, I heard, I don't remember which wrestler said it, but it's a large community, but it's a very small community at the same time.
Oh, no question. There's you probably can't walk into any locker room in the world without finding someone who knows someone else that you know, something along those lines. I mean, to the point where, like, it doesn't even really get brought up, because, like, I wouldn't just walk up to Triple H and be like, hey, you know, we trained, you know, at the same facility. Or, I mean, he didn't train at the same facility, but, you know, we trained at the same school, so to speak, because that wouldn't be relevant, because everybody could say that to somebody,
right.
You know, and it's, you know, it doesn't really hold water when, you know, everybody's so closely involved.
Yeah, it's not really that big of a selling point when everybody can do the same comment. Yeah,
pretty much. Yeah.
So, and you mentioned it a little earlier, and I do want to touch on it. But you were a two-sport athlete in college, both football and basketball, which is maybe not the most common pairing. But how does that translate into and help with pro wrestling?
Two things I would say: athleticism. First and foremost, it's a huge part of professional wrestling. It's something that I wouldn't say a lot of guys are lacking, but you know, it's a piece that's I think clear to a lot of fans and becoming clearer and clearer. It used to be something that you know guys could get away with not being the most athletic, but now, I mean, especially in Ring of Honor, where every single person is an athlete. You know, you really can't, there's no real way to work around it in that company. I mean, in other companies, you know, microphone work and things like that take a precedent, but, yeah, especially in a company like Ring of Honor, athleticism is huge. And number two would be, or maybe not number two, that's not fair, but maybe 1A would be like hard work. Dedication to a craft. You know, it's a really demanding physical sport that requires to succeed anyway, requires the utmost dedication. So to have, you know, however many years I've been playing basketball and football. Football I couldn't play till freshman year of high school, but basketball I've been playing since, you know, since I could stand. So, and the fact that I've been, you know, going to practice, at least for basketball, but usually basketball, football, and sometimes track and field. And I've been doing that for so long, and it's become such a part of my life to, you know, have my day and then go to practice that, you know, now that I mean, I had probably a year where I wasn't doing that, and it was probably the most boring year of my entire life. And that was that year after I stopped playing sports, before I was, before I started training for professional wrestling. So that was the year where I was trying to fill it by watching WWE. And that was, you know, I mean, I like watching the product, but I mean, obviously I started doing it. And so now I still go to training, two or three times a week. I've been going every single week since I started training. It's something that I really look forward to. I never enjoyed football practice because it was so painful, but professional wrestling practice, it's painful, yeah, but it's a lot more enjoyable. And I always enjoyed basketball practice and the games especially, but you know, pro wrestling is very much the same, and it's just a passion of mine. So even tonight I'm going to be heading off to go train at the NAPWA.
Now, I'm guessing I probably know the answer already, but does your natural athleticism help you kind of pick up the training quicker than maybe, you know, some other people that, you know, that might be in your training class or just in general?
Without question. Yeah. The first time I did the fantasy camp, it reminded me of, I don't remember where I was reading it. I want to say it was one of Mick Foley's books, his autobiographies that I read. And it was a quote from Triple H about the first time that he walked into Killer Kowalski's, back when it was in Malden. I guess an ex-girlfriend of his dropped him off and then picked him up. And then the first thing that he told her was that, I'm going to paraphrase, but it was something along the lines of that he just like felt it felt right. He felt at home. That's pretty much exactly how I felt the first time I stepped into a ring. I felt comfortable, not comfortable. I mean, it hurt like hell, but you know, it just felt right to be hitting the ropes and to be taking bumps and, you know, going over the ropes backwards and through the ropes and just the whole feel of the whole thing. Like it was, you know, it took some getting used to, and obviously it was surprising how painful it was, but I would say that it just felt right. And that's definitely, helpful, and, or that's definitely a product of the athletic background, I would say.
I got you. So, next question I got to ask you is, you probably have I think it's the coolest finishing move I've seen in maybe the last 10 or 15 years. You call it Feast Your Eyes, from what I understand. Where did the move actually come from? How did you come up with it? And kind of where'd you come up with the name also?
Well, thank you for the compliment, first of all.
It's fierce. It is awesome.
Yes, thank you. The name of the move is derived from a taunt, basically, that I came up with early on in my training. Actually, believe it or not, it's from a short clip that I sent to the I'm gonna get this wrong, but I think he's the vice president of talent relations at WWE. I was just sending him like a quick 30-second clip to show him that I could cut a promo, basically. And I like wrote out a little script, and the very first thing I said was, feast your eyes on whatever I was calling myself at that time. So I liked the way that it sounded, and then I just started kind of yelling it in class, like for a taunt to my opponents. I liked the way that sounded, so I started putting it on a jersey that I wore out. I started putting on t-shirts and stuff, started using it as a catchphrase, and then I got an email from Ring of Honor asking me you know, about the names of my moves, of which I had none. In professional wrestling, you pretty much let other people do that for you, or it was my understanding that you let other people do that for you. You didn't like name your own moves. That's kind of a strange thing to do, but he was asking me, so I had to kind of come up with names for my moves on the fly. So I was like, what the hell am I going to call this this finisher that I literally like not done it like as a finisher before, but I decided that I was going to start using it as a finisher. And I had the catchphrase, and it I don't know, it sounded kind of like it made sense, because it's like I'm kind of like kneeing the guy in the face and the eyes are there. So it sort of seemed to make sense to me. In terms of developing the move itself, I've explained this like a million times because people are so interested. So I'll give the abridged version. Basically, I was in class one day and I was trying to think of new moves, which I'm pretty much always doing after class. That's what the after class time is for, other than conditioning. So I took a kid who I train with now currently. He's on the New England indie scene. His name's Christian Casanova. And he's a lighter kid, so he's easy to do, to try out moves on. So I picked him up backwards, like a body slam. So he was facing away from me. And then I hooked my hand over and I dropped him down and gave him the GTS knee strike. And I was like, okay, I like this move. I filmed it. I showed it to my trainer, Fury. He gave me some critique on it. I wanted a smoother transition into it, so I tried it out of a gut wrench, and that worked a little better. I know if you go back and watch, I think the only time I used that on a show, I used it twice, actually. I used it on CZW's Night of Infamy high pay-per-view against Alexander James. I did the move out of a gut wrench, and I also did it on the first Beyond Wrestling Secret show that I did against Mikey Webb. And both times I did it, it was kind of clumsy and clunky because it's kind of hard to balance a human being's weight entirely on the square of your right shoulder, like in the Farouk Dominator position. I mean, I guess he got away with it because he was way stronger than I am, but you know, with the height, and it kind of brings gravity a little more into the equation. So I thought both visually and in terms of practicality, I tried it out of a burning hammer, basically, and that I started having a lot more success. You know, I could push the legs as opposed to kind of cranking on the guy's neck. It gave that big swinging visual to the hard cam. And then I could, you know, it's just more of a aesthetic picture for the, you know, the hard cam and everything like that. So that's basically how the move evolved into what it is today.
Yeah, if I can describe it for the audience that hadn't seen it or gone to YouTube yet, and go, it starts out almost like Lex Luger's torture rack way back yep. when, and then you flip him into like CM Punk's, I guess it's GTS.
Yep.
But coming from such a big guy, you're 6'7 or 6'10, whatever it is, you're a monster. It visually, it just looks crazy just to see the guy take the hit and then spike and flip. It's a crazy move.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, you know, it's a move, obviously, that if Punk were still wrestling, I probably wouldn't have used, but I feel like he's been far enough removed from the business. And obviously, I think, Hideo Itami is going to start reusing it again. It's obviously his move that Punk took from him, but I mean, I think it's a visual that's cool enough, and it's I guess you could say it's different enough from that move where I'm not just, you know, blatantly ripping off the move. Obviously, it's derived from that, you know, but I don't think
it's not the same. You can get the stamp from me. It's not the same at all.
Okay, yeah, I don't think that they have like a patent on a knee strike. I think that's a pretty commonly enough used thing where I can probably get away with people not being like, oh, he's just stealing their move.
Yeah, I mean, did Punk steal it from Daniel Bryan as well? I mean, it's the same kind of thing. So
yeah, pretty much.
So another person I want to ask you about is your relationship. You mentioned a little earlier with 2014 top prospect winner Hansen. How do you? I guess you've grown up training with him, and just kind of your relationship with him.
So yeah, Hansen was there the very first day I started training at that fantasy camp. He was a head trainer at the Chaotic Training Center. He's another one who trained under Killer Kowalski, and I don't know how I forgot to mention this when I was talking about all the lineage, but he trained under Mike Hollow, who's been a huge part of the New England scene. He trained tons of guys. He was pretty much the head trainer at the CTC for a very long time. He was like the head trainer, Kofi Kingston, and those guys when Walter was, coming. He died in 2008. So he was, a little bit more disconnected towards the end, but, So Hansen trained under Mike a lot, as did most of the guys in Chaotic Wrestling, which is my I guess you would call it my home promotion. It's the promotion that I basically started with, and so my relationship with him started there at the school. He was a head trainer at the New England Pro Wrestling Academy for a while until, Ring of Honor came along, and he had to start dedicating more and more of his time to that. He's still there every so often. And he, he's most of the shows I work now, he's a part of. He works Chaotic regularly. That's been his home forever. He's like a 3-time Chaotic Wrestling heavyweight champion. He also does Northeast Wrestling, which I do regularly. Obviously, he's a regular on Ring of Honor. So he's in most of the locker rooms that I'm involved with currently. So I'm always getting feedback from him. It's awesome having another guy like that that I can go to. And he's a bigger guy, and he's treated, especially in Ring of Honor, he's treated as a bigger guy, so I can go to him for psychology advice, crowd advice, pretty much anything, and he's a friend too, so it's nice to be surrounded by people like him and Tommaso and Taven and Mike Bennett and guys that I can go to both personally and professionally.
Yeah, that's very, very cool, and it's good to see Hansen, kind of maybe paving the way for you in a certain way.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, it's super helpful and humbling all at the same time, because he's been working at this for so long. People don't understand that before Warbeard Hansen was Handsome Johnny, and just a hell of a wrestler for, I want to say 12 years now he's been wrestling. So, and 10 of those years have been Handsome Johnny, a guy who's just one of the most talented wrestlers in the world, but he just had this, this gimmick. It was sort of a comedy style thing. And he'll admit to being, overweight, didn't go to the gym very often, so he had these things that were holding him back, and then he ended up having this major shoulder surgery, decided to grow a beard, I guess, came back as a badass, and all of a sudden things started flourishing for him. But sometimes that's how professional wrestling works. You can be the best in-ring technician in the world, but if you don't have the look and if you don't have the character, then people don't care. But it took him 10 years to get to a place where people wanted to, or at least where Ring of Honor wanted to bring him in and do something with him. So obviously he's happy with the transition, but I mean, it's nice to know that, that a guy like him, is there in my corner. No question.
Yeah, he's seen it all, I would guess, at this point. So,
yeah, pretty much.
All right, Donovan, I don't want to keep you too long, particularly during work day, middle of the week, but I do want to do a quick little rapid fire with you, a few questions, and kind of whatever comes to the top of your head, you know, first answer type thing.
Sure thing.
First question, favorite career match?
My favorite career match is currently airing on Ring of Honor TV, well, for ringside members anyway. It aired this weekend in every market, and now it just got released yesterday for ringside members. It should be available to the public at ROHWrestling.com this Thursday. So what day is today? Tuesday? So yeah, either tomorrow or the day after that, it should be available for free. And that's my top prospect finals match with Will Ferrara. I mean, maybe not the best in-ring display that I've ever had, although it's definitely up there. Just the crowd, the atmosphere, the importance of the match, what it led to, what was on the line, everything like that. It's just there's no real other comparison for me.
Yeah, just everybody should go watch that match just for your moonsault, just to see a big man do that. So
yes.
I'd also give a quick plug for your Ashley Six match earlier in the Top Prospect tournament too. I thought that was a terrific match as well.
Yeah, that's another match that I really loved. That one especially because I think we had like 4 minutes.
It was quick, but you guys got all your spots in and you showed your power. He got his athleticism shown.
Which is a typically in wrestling it's frowned upon if you have like a short amount of time and it's like, hey, we got all of our stuff in. But in this particular match, I'm with Ashley, I'm really proud of the way that we both told a story, showed what we could do, and basically made a connection with the crowd all in 4 minutes. So that's a match that I can chop up and send out to promoters and be like, hey, here's something that'll only take 4 minutes for you to watch, but it shows what both of us can do.
Yeah, I mean, I don't ever tweet out wrestlers. That's not really my thing. I mean, I'm a fan, but I had to tweet out both of you guys and just say what a great match, because I totally and thoroughly enjoyed it.
Well, thank you very much.
So, next quick question for you. Who is your ideal future opponent?
Does it matter what company or who?
Not at all. Anybody you want, and if you want to name a couple guys, that's fine.
The two guys that come to mind, number one for Ring of Honor would be Tommaso Ciampa. He's a guy that I've been in locker rooms around. I've trained with. I've wrestled him in practice scenarios, but I've never had the chance, believe it or not, in a singles competition with him. Despite the fact that we were both in Chaotic Wrestling for so long, and a ton of other promotions that we've both shared locker rooms in, including Ring of Honor. But yeah, I'd love to wrestle Tommaso, and then in terms of all of the world, I would love to get in the ring with Cesaro. I think he's the best in-ring performer that I've ever seen. If you just limit it to the in-ring product, I think he's the best in-ring wrestler in the entire world, and I would love to have the opportunity to wrestle him sometime.
I'd pay money to watch that match. Absolutely. Cesaro's great. I wish he wasn't getting squashed quite as much as he is at WWE, but it is what it is. Next question. Do you prefer playing the heel or the face?
I prefer playing myself and seeing how the crowd will react to it. Sometimes I go to places where nobody knows me, and I come through the curtain and I do my shtick and everybody hates my guts. So if that's the case, then they hate my guts. Sometimes I'm going to be completely honest. When I came out, all three matches for the Top Prospect tournament, I know this is like the cardinal sin of professional wrestling, especially if you're like an old school guy, but I didn't say, oh, I'm the heel and you're the face. You know, let's go do this. I'm going to get a bunch of heat. I said, I'll probably take a more aggressive role, which, that's nothing new. I always take an aggressive role, even if I'm a 100% babyface and the other guy is the most hated person in the world. I'm still going to take a more aggressive role because, I just I'm an aggressive guy. I don't know. That's the way I wrestle. So, so I came through the curtain for all three of those matches. Just seeing how the crowd would react to me. Most of the time they didn't react at all, because I don't think they knew who I was, at least in two of the three matches. For the finals match, I had wrestled earlier that night, so they knew who I was, so that was a little easier. And I think that ECW arena crowd connected with me, so at that point I was probably a babyface, but I mean, so was Will. So at that point, you know, it's win-win. Because maybe for some of the match they don't like me and they want to see Will kick my ass, and then some of the match they do like me and they want to see me do a SIA moonsault. So as long as the crowd is up, I feel like I've done my job. As long as they're happy with what they're seeing, then that's the important part. I mean, I know that good guys and bad guys are like the root of all professional wrestling, but I mean, especially when you're an unestablished character and you're just kind of making your debut somewhere, I think it's more important to just see how the people feel about who you are naturally.
That's an interesting take. I definitely was not expecting that answer. That's very cool. Final question. What are your goals for 2015?
Well, interesting. I haven't done a podcast. I mean, everyone who's asked me that on podcasts, I always use the same answer, and that's to get, you know, to get signed by somewhere, but you know, that's pretty much happening right now. So I would say to get on more international promotions would probably be a big goal of mine. To get on more, I don't know how to phrase this, but I guess like top level, independent companies, you know, would be a huge goal. I just want to continue growing my brand and making a name for myself, you know, and the best way for me to do that is to get on more nationally recognized companies and internationally recognized companies.
That'll
be my immediate goal.
And one more question, if I could, that just came to mind. What is your favorite or the funniest fan sign you've ever seen?
there's a girl at Chaotic Wrestling who's been, I guess, my biggest fan since day one, although she's starting to do, I think she does like CZW's social media something or other now, like some sort of interviews for them now or something like that. But her name is Catherine, and she's had some pretty spectacular signs front and center at Chaotic Wrestling before that I do my best to ignore, because they're like me, it's like my face on like a unicorn's body or something, and then like sometimes there's kittens all over the place, and they're exclusively made to make me laugh in the ring, and I you know, I try not to to laugh in a humorous sense. Sometimes I like laugh at my opponent like I'm mocking him, but I try not to you know, just go from this big ass kicking guy to like some guy who's laughing at kittens. But
right.
But it you know, it takes a fair amount of restraint to not make eye contact with the sign. So I'd say those are the best ones that I've seen.
That's absolutely.
Although yours was great too.
Oh, which one did you like?
I saw the pink one. I don't remember what it's something about.
I paid to see Dijak, which had Mike Bennett breaking character and laughing hysterically.
Excellent.
He was just looking at me with this most confused look on his face. It was priceless.
Yes, he was probably wondering why you paid to see me while he's standing out there wrestling.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Why are you putting up that sign now? Yeah. So, well, Donovan, thank you so much for joining me. This has been a great interview, and it's been a lot of fun getting a little insight into you, your career, and a little bit into pro wrestling. want to give you a spot here to plug where people can find your work, Twitter, and basically anything you want to plug.
Yeah, absolutely. So you can find me at on Twitter at Donovan Dijak. Donovan Dijak is pretty much how all of these work, so I'll spell it. It's DonovanDijak. Twitter is at Donovan Dijak, Facebook.com/DonovanDijak, and ProWrestlingTees.com/DonovanDijak. And my ProWrestlingTees.com store should have a new design uploaded sometime this week, maybe today if I have enough time. But I've got a few new designs that I'm working on, so people can maybe actually buy one, because I've only sold one in my entire life. But maybe this new design will get me some more sales. We'll see.
That's very cool. When you start selling the Dijak Mark t-shirt, I definitely want a freebie.
Yes. Yes, so, that will be on its way.
Well, Donovan, thank you so much for joining me, and I look forward to seeing you, I guess, next time Ring of Honor comes through this area.
Awesome. Sounds good. I'll hopefully be there.
Thank you so much. Thanks for joining me today.
Yep, thank you for having me.
And that was my interview with Ring of Honor superstar Donovan Dijak. I want to thank him again for joining me today and peeling back the curtain, so to speak, on the pro wrestling business and discussing Ring of Honor a little bit. He's going to be a superstar. Well, I guess he already is a superstar now, but we're going to be watching him at WrestleMania in a few years. So I'm very excited and thankful that he joined me today. We are finished with this edition of the Nats GM Show. Bye for now.